L. This man are still alive, and would resent the use of his name. I have been reluctantly compelled to suppress these details, which were absolutely convincing to us. Chapter 6. L. Describes his death. Letter 7. Same night, 8 p.m. I became unconscious and after a time recovered, or so it seemed. Indeed, my mind suddenly became clear, but I began to feel a heavy weight. Gradually I realized that this weight was slipping away from me, or rather, I was sliding out from it, as if someone were drawing his hand out from a wet glove. Then I began to feel tree at one end, so to speak, and then I began to see again. I saw once more the room and the people in it. Then I was free. Free. I saw myself lying stretched out on the bed, and from my mouth came, as it were, a cord of light. It vibrated for a moment, then snapped, and from my mouth came away. At that moment someone said, "I think he has gone," or if they did not say it, they thought it. Then I realized what I looked like for the first time. How different from what I had always seen in my looking glass. But was it I? It looked so strange. But even as I looked I was aware of an awful feeling of cold. Mr. K. and the others say that while the next few lines were being written, I exhibited all the signs of suffering intense cold. I shivered and moaned, "Cold, cold, most piteously. Cold. Cold. Piercing feeling of cold. It pierced me through and through. Nothing I can write can give you any idea of that cold. The icy blast pierced me as no earthly wind ever did or can. I was a naked soul, no body, nothing to give me warmth. I shuddered and shivered like this for many a seeming age. Suddenly it seemed to grow a little less. I was aware of a presence. How can I describe him, this glorious being? Then I could hardly grasp any clear idea, but having since been in his company constantly, I can describe him a little better. Even now he seemed to change every moment. At one instant I seem to know him well, at another he changes and I can get no clear idea of his face or form. He shimmers and shines and flashes, and seems as if he were made of fire. His robes, his face, his whole form is as it were fire. Yet that word gives but a faint idea, nor would the word light be any nearer. All color, too, is there. This glorious one is my teacher. Hardly had I perceived him, when the whole room in which I stood and the people who were there seemed to dissolve and fade away. Lo! I was in the most exquisite scenery imaginable. Every lovely spot I had ever visited was there, and countless others which I had never seen, beautiful rolling hills clothed with grass and trees, real trees, yes, and animals and even butterflies, flowers, too, of every description. Not only English wild and garden flowers, but all manner of foreign plants, orchids and so forth, the like of which I never saw on earth. Nor did they seem strange or out of place, nor yet the sight of tropical palms and English oaks growing side by side. On earth it would certainly have seemed so, but here it appeared quite natural. "Where am I?" I thought, and no sooner had the idea entered my mind, if indeed one can use the word, then the shining one seemed to answer. "You are in the land of after death. Are you surprised that there are trees and animals here, and even grass? Knows that here comes every thought which you have ever thought, soon also you shall know that is so, to your sorrow, and, further, here come also the spiritual forms of all that ever lived. Thus is our spirit world built up and thus it constantly increases. All that lives, no matter how humble it be, comes here of itself. All thoughts come here. Hence you recognize many beauty spots you knew on earth. Hence also the palm and the oak, and the orchid which you never saw. You have much to learn." "Do all thoughts live?" I cried, or thought. Even as the idea formed, the whole scene was blotted out from my perception. A horror seemed to grip me. "Mr. K., etc., declare that here I again began to exhibit signs of acute anguish. Ed. Like a hideous nightmare, on every side visions seemed to press me round. They weighed me down. I, who but a moment before had seemed so light, now seemed to be crushed under an intolerable weight. I saw them not with mortal eyes, I perceived them with my whole being. I call them visions, but they were in real bodily form, like tableaus, moving and acting again before me all my past. My past deeds crowded before me, not in any order, but like a dream, all at once. Oh! The anguish as once more rose up deeds long since forgotten. Little or great, nothing was now forgotten. At last, after what seemed countless ages, an inspiration seemed to seize me, and I prayed. I had not done so for years and years, but now I prayed, O God, help me. And as I prayed, really prayed, slowly the wild chaos began as it were to sort itself out. It, as it were, took a kind of chronological order, and the scenes took the form, as it were, of a street which stretched far away, far beyond my ken, and they will go on increasing as I progress till they reach to the judgment seat of God. And among them I saw many visions which came as a relief to my tired soul, little acts of kindness which I had long forgotten, times when I had resisted temptation. So I found, as it were, my location. H. J. L. Witness, K. Chapter 7. How the Living Appear to the Departed. Vision in Trance on the night of February 2, 1914. H.J.L. Ask your friends to keep a watchful eye on you from the time that the officer takes control till the time when I resume it, particularly during the periods of rest. Pay careful heed to these points, as there are certain risks which must be faced in this kind of work. You are quite safe so long as you obey my instructions to the letter. You will receive a letter 6 from Mr. K. tomorrow, Tuesday, confirming the details regarding Dr. K., so I trust you are now quite satisfied. With regard to what the officer writes, I can promise you every word is true, but he, too, only speaks of what he knows. There may be depths below that to which he sank, and doubtless other spirits have not all had the same experience, though in hell. What he will tell you explains much of the common forms of occult phenomena, that is death portents, haunted houses plaguing, and so forth. Don't be afraid, we will stand by you, and so long as you obey my instructions you will be all right. Have you any questions? J. W. When you are doing the automatic writing, can you see those who are present? H.J.L. Yes, but they look rather different to what they do to you. We see them as they are, not as they seem to be. Thus it often happens to us that those whom earth folk consider beautiful seem ugly, while those who look homely to you, to us seem beautiful. As a rule, we see the souls rather than the bodies. The bodies are the like a gray mass, as in the Röntgen ray photos the bones show through the flesh. If we greatly wish we can sometimes see the bodies, but even still the people cannot deceive us into thinking them beautiful when they are not. Their spiritual ugliness shows through their physical beauty. We see, too, all the spirits who have been attracted round, whether they are good spirits or evil, for some people and places have the power of attracting spirits, sometimes good and sometimes evil. Now I must return to my task here. H. J. L. 6. This I did receive. Chapter 8, A Plan of the Spirit Plane. Sixth Transvision of H. J. L. by J. W. On Monday, February 9, 1914, H.J.L. For your general convenience let me tell you that this realm is divided as follows: 1. Belief with works, 2. Belief without works, 3. Half belief, 4. Unbelief. Hell. When the soul has reached the highest plane of the first division, it goes through something that is akin to a second death, for there it leaves behind its spiritual body. But the soul who attains to that state rejoices in its coming relief. It does not fear it as the mortals do death, for those souls who are not yet ready do not cross the barrier. Once they have passed into the next realm, they cannot return. There are, including earth, 7 such realms, of which the highest is to be with God. We who are here know only of the realm we are in, which we will call the 6th, the 7th being earth, which includes the astral plane. We cannot go to the 5th until our time has come, and then we cannot return. Still, to this rule are certain exceptions. Very rarely messengers are sent down to us from the realms above, but this only happens for some good reason, and is comparable to the visible and audible return of one who is dead to earth. The other and more usual method is through a medium. Just as we communicate through you, so those in the fifth realm use a spirit in the higher planes of the sixth through whom to communicate. Any message from the fifth realm would thus have to pass through two mediums to reach earth. Each plane in the sixth realm is divided into various divisions, and sometimes these divisions are divided into spheres. I will show you a kind of diagram, so that you can grasp it better. Then a huge sheet seemed to appear before me, with the preceding diagram written in lines of fire. The sheet appeared gray. Diagram of Spirit Plane. CPDF Doc. H. J. L. Continued, of course this is only a diagram, and, further, I have made it as simple as I can. Thus I have, of course, not attempted to show every small sect, but only the chief ones, yet you must remember that every religion is there. The diagram refers to our state or condition, not to place, which does not exist with us. Further, there are many fluctuations and cross-currents which I cannot show easily. Thus, Sufism has obvious similarities to pantheism, and Mormonism to Mohammedanism. So, too, souls fluctuate within their plane. Thus the officer sometimes reaches Division 2, but he is usually very decidedly in Division Number 1. I am in Division 2. As you reckon time, I was but a few days in Division I, but to me it seemed many years. Here what I call soul study is the chief business, our relaxation is what was our work on earth. This brings us into touch with men of similar occupations and tastes, though differing in religious matters. Thus we may compare this side to a series of circles. Again on the screen of gray I saw this diagram of fire. Thus I get to know a man who is keen on archaeology because we are both interested in architecture, though from somewhat different points of view. I need not labor the point, as I see you grasp it. Here, you will see, the man who is interested in absolutely only one thing here, as on earth, will get to know far fewer people. These circles keep men in touch who otherwise would be quite separated owing to different religious outlook. Thus the modern Roman Catholic and the ancient Greek philosopher may meet in the Greek spheres, as these circles are often called, both being interested in Greek culture from a different standpoint. While we are in the region of half-belief, the religious divisions are only faintly visible, but when one gets into the set above one finds them very clear. You must first grasp a few truths firmly before you are ready to absorb others. Each sect grows towards the others as men progress, because while they retain the vital truth which has called them into existence, all religions lose their errors as the believer mounts higher towards God, who is himself truth. A point that may not be quite clear is that in Division 3 of our set the first messengers start. These go down for the most part, as far as the schools. They are not the glorious ones of fire who go down into hell itself. They come from far above. The risk for our people would be too great. Even in the schools the earth pull is so strong that the messengers cast back their own progress for many earthly years. The babes' schools are for those children who died too young to learn anything. They learn to believe, and as recreations they learn what you call work, only it is, of course, on a higher plane. No need to learn to read or write, for example. J. W. Who teaches them? H. J. L. From Division 3 go down many women who for some reason were never mothers on earth. Thus they satisfy the primal instinct of women. Also schoolmasters and parsons go there. Often they go down for what you would call a space of time, and then return to their work in Division 3, for teaching is not work here, but recreation. Now do not turn my diagrams into a cast iron system. Remember there is far more flux here than on earth. Now I have told you enough for the time being. Is there anything you wished to say? J. W. What is the purpose of the school for those who have progressed, and why is it that this school is separate from that for the babes? H. J. L. They must get some vague ideas before they can even half believe. As yet they simply have a vague longing to believe. They must also learn to realize the evilness of the scenes which rise up before them from their former life. They are like babes in knowledge, and must learn, but you would not have them mix with the innocent babes, Would you? Now goodbye. Chapter 9, The Passing of a Saint. Letter from H. J. L. February 14th. I have taken control. I have been to see a death from this side. My guide took me. We entered a room, I cannot explain exactly how, but we simply found ourselves there. It was a large, airy room, nicely but not very expensively furnished. Outside there was a garden, but, being winter, of course there was not much life in it. On the bed was an old man about 70 years, a parson. My guide spoke. This was a faithful minister of the truth, as far as he knew it, one of those souls who come straight to the realm of belief, in the land where men believed and acted up to their beliefs. He is the Roman Catholic priest of this parish. Over his bed hung a Sister of Mercy, and beside him knelt a priest, who was giving him extreme unction. Suddenly the room became full of beautiful spirits. They filled the room and stretched far out into space. "Who are these?" I asked. "All the fair souls he has helped to save. See this woman, she was a poor fallen sister whose feet he turned to the paths of truth. That was a foolish boy who, but for him, would be in the set below yours. That father would have driven that girl, his daughter, onto the streets, but he, the priest, Ed, took her to a nunnery, and by degrees softened the father's heart. Now both of them are in the realm of belief, of those who acted up to those beliefs. All these have come to welcome their pastor and friend." Then I was aware of a still more glorious being. "Kneel," whispered my guide. All that glorious company sank on their knees, I humbly with them. "Who is he?" I whispered. "He is the teacher and ruler of that realm. He comes to take him home. Look." Slowly from the body a light seemed to rise, stronger stood the head. It was almost golden, but had a touch of blue in it. Gradually it seemed to take the form of a head and shoulders, and slowly I saw this figure of light draw out from its fleshy covering. Soon it was clear, and at once a glad cry broke from the lips of the hundreds who were present. "Father, your children greet you with joy and gladness," they seemed to say. And the good priest smiled on them, and, as he did, I noticed the body too seemed to smile. The spirit turned and blessed those earthly ones who were watching by the bed. Then the cord of flame, which had been growing longer and longer, snapped, and I heard a wild cry of sorrow from the mourners below, but it was quite drowned in the song of rejoicing which burst from the lips of the spirit throng. The great spirit took him by the hand and seemed to say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant, thou hast been faithful in a little, now thou shalt rule over many. I make thee the pastor of all these whom on earth thou didst save," and the wild song of joy which burst from the assembled crowd still rings in my ears. Then we were alone, I and my guide, and the humble mourners, but I knew it was well, and I too went away rejoicing. I shall write no more. Thank all five who have helped tonight. I hope the two newcomers are now satisfied as to the necessity for the officer's work, and also realize the full aim of this book. Again thanking you, yours, H. J. L. Those present were Mr. and Mrs. K., Mrs. S., Mr. and Mrs. J. February 10, 1914. Chapter 10, describes the school to which he went and what he learnt there. Seventh trance dream, February 16. H. J. L. Well, Jack, do you wish to ask me any questions? J. W. What has happened to that beautiful tract of country you spoke of when you had just died? H.J.L. Open your eyes. Then it seemed as if my eyes were opened and behold, I was in the most lovely country. The light was of the kind one sees on a summer evening. Over the distant horizon the red glow of sunset was just visible, tinging the hilltops and reflected in the water of many streams and lakelets. We were standing side by side in an avenue of trees, tall and splendid. I saw H. J. L. quite plainly. He was not dressed in the clothes I had seen him in when he had appeared clairvoyantly, that is earthly, but in long flowing robes of white which seemed as if they were really part of his body in some mysterious way. A soft faint light seemed to come out from his body, impossible to describe. Looking again at the landscape, it seemed to me to contain everything beautiful of natural scenery. The view grows wider, I perceive lakes and snow-capped mountains, rushing rivers, and lo! Beyond all, the sea. But over all was a soft evening light. Do you have day and night here? I asked him. No. The light conies from ourselves, though, indeed, there is that mysterious red glow. It is the light of God, of faith, of truth, which reaches us but goes no further. The higher we go the brighter it becomes, till at length it is all in all. In hell there is no light either from faith or the individuals there. The real light by which we perceive things is within ourselves. The light you see I hardly realize, it is more comparable to the other effects of the landscape than light by which we can perceive. We seated ourselves on the soft grass under an oak tree, and below us I could see palms and tropical birds mingling with the ordinary English scenery. Tell me what happened, I asked, after the visions had sorted themselves out as you told me they did in your letter. H.J.L. On either side the street of visions stretched as far as I could see, impinging on the landscape, which nevertheless I began to perceive again. Suddenly my teacher and guide stood beside me. Come with me, he said, and led me clean through one of my visions into the country beyond. How to explain exactly what happened to my visions, I know not, but though they always haunt me, are with me even at the present moment, though unseen by you, yet they gradually fell into the background as it were. We walked across the fields and down the slope of a hill, and as we did so, I saw the roof of a splendid building. What is that? I asked. The school to which you are going. Apostrophe school. I'm not a child. I cried. Indeed you are, an absolute child in matters of faith. Look how small you are. As he spoke I realized that he had become tall, but could not realize that I was small. We now stood before the portals of the building, surely the most magnificent and beautiful school which was ever conceived. Soon I was taken into a classroom, for so I must needs call it, for lack of a better name, and saw a number of boys. Boys, no. They were men, but strangely immature, though they looked like little miniature adults. Then I saw their master or instructor. What a difference! Not merely was he a well-grown man, but he seemed to be made of light, light which filled the whole classroom with a bright, soft glow. The bodies of the other boys looked gray, though some were brighter than the others, and mine, I discovered, was the darkest of them all. Next moment I looked round for my guide, but he was gone. But the master took me quietly by the hand and set me in a seat. Then began the most wonderful lesson I have ever witnessed. His methods were entirely different to those of the ordinary schoolmaster. He seemed to draw the knowledge out of the boys rather than attempt to tell them anything. Most of the questions were quite unintelligible to me, though the others seemed to understand them quite well. His method consisted in asking cleverly arranged questions, and the answer to each led on to the next question. After a while he turned to me and said, "Would you like to ask me any questions?" "How is it," I asked, "that everything looks so solid here, and, above all, how is it I have a body? I thought I was a spirit." He. "What do all human beings consist of?" H. J. L. "Body and soul." He. "How would a scientist define these?" H. J. L. "Matter and force." He. "Good. What happens to the matter when you die? Is it destroyed?" H. J. L. "Matter can't be destroyed. It merely changes its form. My body will rot and become earth, and plants will grow out of it." He. "What of the force which made the body act?" H.J.L. "It has come here. It is the spirit. It, too, cannot perish." He. "Neither the matter nor the force perish. Yet is the body on the earth the same as when you lived?" H.J.L. Number he. "What makes it different? If you were to look at it now, wherein would it chiefly differ?" H. J. L. "Well, it would be losing its old shape. Its form would be different." He. "The form would have gone. If neither the matter nor the force perish, what happens to the form? Can that perish?" H. J. L. "I do not see why not." He. "What of the form of the thoughts which haunt you? Their form has not perished. Why, then, should your form perish if theirs remains? H. J. L. Yes, but I still exist. Who thought those forms? So someone must have thought of me before I existed if I am like my thoughts. For I thought of them, and so they came into existence. He. Precisely. Someone must have thought of you. That person is God. He created you by thought, and so, too, you create things by thought. What lessons have you learnt? H. J. L. That form, like matter and force, does not perish. Secondly, that, as God created me by thinking of me, so I create forms by thinking of them. He. And what answer can you deduce to your questions from these facts? H. J. L. I suppose all that I see are forms, and being a form myself, they seem as solid as myself. But why do I seem solid? He. How could you seem otherwise? There is no matter here. H. J. L. If I went back to the earth, as I am, should I then appear to myself less substantial? He. Would you thereby become matter? H. J. L. No. You mean unless one becomes matter oneself, one would only seem form and force, not matter. He. If a light is placed in the midst of a cloud of smoke, what would you see? H. J. L. Why, of course, a light shining, through perhaps dimly, through smoke. He. What is a flame? H. J. L. Force. He. Nothing more? H. J. L. It of course has a form. He. What is the smoke? H. J. L. Matter and form. He. Does this not answer your question? H. J. L. You mean I should see the spirit form shining through the material form as a candle does through smoke or fog? He. Yes. H. J. L. Having left matter behind, shall I ultimately also leave behind form? As I spoke these words, a terrible stillness seemed to fill the room. All the other boys leant forward expectantly. He. You have asked a question which I at any rate cannot fully answer. But this I can tell you, that we do leave behind the present form on rising to the next realm. What happens none of us here knows. We cannot see beyond the wall of fire any more than mortal eyes can penetrate the veil of death. The great messengers may know, but we who do but come from the highest divisions of this realm know not. You still wish to ask a question? H. J. L. We who are created by God look to Him for help and consider Him responsible for our well-being. Are we also responsible for the forms we create? Again the silence that could be felt brooded over the room. He. You ask wise questions, though so young. What happened to you after you had spoken a while with your guide? H. J. L. I told him of the hideous nightmare which had seized me, and how it sorted itself into order when I prayed. He. Does this not answer your question in part? Did not your thoughts claim you? H. J. L. I bowed my head in shame and sat silent. He. But your question means more than that. Speak on. H. J. L. But my thoughts cannot create fresh thoughts, as I can. He. Directly no, but what of indirectly? H. J. L. How can they even indirectly? He. In the material world an evil act is done. Are there none who copy that evil act? H. J. L. That is so, of course. But surely things are different here? He. Tell him the answer to that. One of the boys then spoke as follows: nothing exists on earth which has not its counterpart here. We see this in the trees and birds and buildings, as also in many other things. But all things here lack crude matter. H. J. L. But do their evil thoughts here influence others to evil? He. When on earth did you never notice that two men, or even more, each working independently, even separated from each other by thousands of miles, at the same moment make the same discovery? H. J. L. Yes, often, but put it down to coincidence. He. There is no such thing as coincidence. That word is merely a cloak employed by men to disguise the fact that they are ignorant of some of the fundamental laws of God.